Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Welcome back to Mama Mystery. I am your host, Kelly, and thank you for joining me for the weekly docket where I recap the true crime headlines for the week. So before we talk about the first story, I want to let you know I had the chance to finally sit down with Austin. I know some of you have missed having him on the podcast and his input. Well, he's very curious and invested about the Charlie Kirk situation. So I got him to sit down and talk with me about that and go through all of the text messages that Tyler allegedly sent his roommate slash lover and just the odd things about what the authorities have told us so far. However, the conversation was only supposed to last like 10 minutes because I wanted to include it as part of the weekly docket, and then it ended up being over an hour that we sat and talked about this. So I decided to make that a Patreon exclusive episode by itself. So if you want to listen to it, you can head to patreon.com/mamamystery. Aside from that, we still have 5 stories I want to talk about today, so let's get into it. We finally have what appears to be an update in the Travis Decker case, the man who is accused of murdering his 3 daughters and leaving them on a bank and like a wooded area. So this takes place in Chelan County, Washington, near Leavenworth, in a remote wooded area. And authorities are saying that they have found human remains that they believe may be those of Travis Decker. And the remains were located in a wooded area south of Leavenworth, less than a mile from where his daughters were found dead in June at Rock Island Campground. Alongside the remains, investigators found personal items and clothing thought to match what Decker was wearing when he disappeared. So less than a mile from where his daughters were found dead, how the hell did it take them this long? I don't know. But DNA confirmation is still pending. They haven't officially said, yes, it's Travis Decker yet. Just that preliminary things line up. We believe it's probably him. So because of decomposition and possible exposure to the elements and animals, etc., it's not obvious how long the remains have been there, or at least they haven't released that information, but the condition is described as severe. So again, that leads me to think he's been there for a while. How the hell did they not know? Like, how did they not find him? I have so many questions. So as we know, Decker is accused of murdering his 3 daughters, 9-year-old Peyton, 8-year-old Evelyn, and 5-year-old Olivia. They were found June 2nd, months ago, at a campground near Leavenworth, and the girls had plastic bags over their heads and zip ties on their wrists. Autopsy said that they died of suffocation. So after that, Travis Decker had vanished after failing to return his daughters from a scheduled visitation, and he was considered dangerous and trained in survival because of his army background, which complicated the manhunt, apparently. Now, the big piece is, of course, DNA testing. Once they get that back, we'll know if these remains are officially Travis Decker's, and that confirmation could bring some closure, but in my opinion, I think it just raises more questions. Now, investigators will also be processing the site fully, of course, with the forensic scan, recovery of personal items, possibly cause and manner of death if it hadn't been determined earlier for him. The family has been notified, and there are people watching this situation closely because every inch and every tip has mattered in this case. So once they give any more updates, I will include it here on another weekly docket. But I want to know what you guys think, how baffling it is that they found these remains less than a mile from where the girls were, despite this extensive manhunt that went on for months. I'm inclined to believe that maybe he was hidden somehow. I mean, I'm not laughing because it's funny. I'm just like, how the hell? Basically that's all. Let's go to the next one. This next story is a disturbing child abuse case from Fayette County, Pennsylvania, that has captured national attention. Police arrested a local couple after discovering their five children living in squalor, described as a dungeon inside the family's home. James Russell Call, who is 65 years old, and his wife Carly Call, who is 41, now face multiple felony charges after authorities found the children ages 5 to 14 locked in deplorable conditions in their house. So this actually goes back to August 8th, when Pennsylvania State Police troopers responded to the family's home in Redstone Township, which is within Fayette County, after a tip to Children and Youth Services about the children's living conditions. Inside, officers found five children ranging in ages from 5 to 14 living in squalor with no beds. They had boarded up windows. There was feces smeared on the bedroom walls. There were fleas everywhere and almost no food or clothing. Investigators say the children's bedroom door had been locked from the outside, allegedly by their father, trapping the kids in one room for most of each day and all night. The room had even surveillance cameras hardwired to the father's bedroom, effectively turning it into this dungeon that he could just watch and surveil, I guess. But after documenting these horrific conditions, officials immediately removed all five children from the home that same day and placed them into the care of County Child Protective Services. In the weeks following the rescue, authorities continued building their case against the parents, and investigators conducted forensic interviews with each of the five children while the kids remained in the safe custody of Fayette County Children and Youth Services. So these interviews and further evidence gathering throughout August helped corroborate the abuse allegations as officials prepared to take legal action. Then on September 3rd, Pennsylvania State Troopers arrested James and Carly outside of their Redstone Township home after executing a search warrant nearly a month after the initial rescue. During the search, officers uncovered additional evidence of abuse and neglect, including a stun gun, a replica handgun, surveillance camera equipment, drugs, and drug paraphernalia inside the house. And based on this evidence, the couple was taken into the custody, on the spot by state police. The next day, September 4th, the arrested couple appeared in court for a preliminary arraignment, and according to court records, a judge denied bail for both James and Carly, so they remain behind bars. Authorities also formally filed a litany of charges against the duo, including aggravated assault, endangering the welfare of children, reckless endangerment, criminal conspiracy, as well as offenses related to the use of a stun gun and drug possession discovered in the home. So these charges are serious and reflect the multiple forms of abuse and danger that the kids were subjected to. So the other day, today's the 19th, this would have been 2 days ago, they went in front of a judge. I don't have the court records from that preliminary hearing, but it does look like they are going to remain in jail without bail until, I guess, their trial starts, or until they enter a plea agreement at the very least. Now, it turns out that there were red flags about the Call's household long before the August 2025 incident. So Rachel Silba is the biological mother of two of the five children, and she had tried to raise alarm for years. James is the father of all five children, and Carly is the mother of the other three children. Well, Rachel reportedly filed protection from abuse orders against James as early as 2016 and made multiple reports to child services about signs of abuse over the years. In one court filing, James allegedly threatened to lock one of their daughters in a garage if she didn't stop crying. But despite these warnings, a judge at one point ordered a 50-50 custody split between Rachel and James after Rachel was diagnosed with a serious medical condition, meaning the children continued spending time with their father. And this is like the tale as old as time that I see, where there's all these red flags. Oh, someone tried to tell them, but the judge still let them go see their dad because, you know, family is important. But like, why are we disregarding the seriousness of these red flags and these warnings? Because now we've got these kids who have been subjected to prolonged abuse, and they will have lifelong trauma because of it. So I don't understand this system where we have to wait until things get bad enough before we act. Like, it's so backwards. I don't know how to fix it. I've talked about this a million times on this podcast before, but I just don't understand it. I've experienced similar situations myself where I've tried to raise alarms about a parent. I won't get into specifics, but a parent. And I had documented proof in the form of pictures, multiple pictures, including things that, you know, children were being subjected to that they shouldn't. And yet nothing was going to happen. Literally nothing. They couldn't do anything because nobody had been injured yet. Literally yet. So I don't know, something about this system has to change. I also fear for the fact that these kids are now in Child and Youth Protective Services, because we know that that system is often broken too. So I just pray to God that they are with a loving family who is actually able to take care of them and not, you know, compound or exacerbate this abuse that they've already been through. But on to the next story. Before we go on, I want to take a moment to thank the sponsor of today's episode, which is Armoire. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, you just swap them out for more new to you styles. I will admit I was a little skeptical at first because I'm not the type of person who dresses up very often, but you guys, this is actually so perfect and I'm genuinely so excited about this new membership with Armoire. And I want to tell you what the process was like for me. I got onto their website and I mean, there were so much to choose from. I ended up choosing 6 items and I was kind of like, we'll see what happens, you know, not sure how they were going to arrive, if they were going to be like noticeably used or what. But listen, 2 days after I placed my like case order, it showed up on my doorstep. Everything was like, when I pulled it out of the bag, everything was neatly folded and then tied up in this really pretty little bow. And I got so excited. I'm actually taking a trip to Dallas with my daughter soon, so I'm gonna wear an outfit for that. Austin and I are gonna go to a Teddy Swims concert, so I got an outfit for that. I'm like, you guys, I'm so excited about this because everything showed up in great condition. I mean, I think it looks brand new. And it's $900 worth of clothes that I'm renting for less than $100. And the best part for me is that I can just send it back. I don't typically dress up that often, but this is so perfect for like the random occasions that I do dress up without having to go and like splurge on an entire new outfit that I might only wear once. I will be honest, I feel guilty that over half of my closet has only been worn once, if at all. And there are even a few items that are going to Goodwill with the tags on them. So I love being on trend and having new things to wear, but I hate the waste that I'm creating when I do that, right? So Armoire allows me to rent these high quality designer clothes for any occasion and then just send it back. If you've got a wedding or a job interview or just like anything that you just want to kind of dress up a little bit. But the nice thing is they also have athleisure. So I got this really cute Kate Spade anorak jacket that I can wear with like a pair of leggings, and it just kind of makes you feel a little more dressed up while you're still dressed down. I also got some really cool floral wide leg pants from Steve Madden with this really cute denim halter like front vest top to go with it. And just in case that doesn't work out, I got another option too to go with the pants, and then I can have like kind of 2 outfits in one. You guys, I cannot tell you enough how excited I am about this. And right now my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/mama. That's armoire.style, armoire.style/mama to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Please try Armoire today. And if you do, tag me in the pictures of your outfits so I can get some inspiration and kind of see what y'all are getting. But this is so fun. I'm really, really excited about this. Thanks again to Armoire for sponsoring today's episode. And now back to the story.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio.
T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey, everybody. It's Nicole Byer here with some hot takes from Wayfair. A cozy corduroy sectional from Wayfair? Yeah, that's a hot take. Go on and add it to your cart and take it. A pink glam nightstand from Wayfair? Scalding hot take. Take it before I do. A mid-century modern cabinet from Wayfair that doubles as a wine bar? Do I have to say it? It's a hot take. Get it at Wayfair.com and enjoy that free shipping too.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
So this week, there's been a big development in the Luigi Mangione case. So if you remember, Luigi was facing some of the heaviest charges that you can get in New York. Murder as an act of terrorism. And I'm sure you remember Luigi is accused of fatally shooting a United Healthcare executive outside the company's Manhattan office back in April of 2024 in what investigators say was a targeted attack. Prosecutors also claim he left behind writings and online posts that pointed to this anti-government and extremist motives, which is why terrorism charges were originally filed. Well, on September 16th, earlier this week, a judge dropped those terrorism counts. Basically, the prosecutors could not prove that Luigi's actions were meant to intimidate the public or push some kind of government policy, which is what's needed to make those charges stick. But don't get it twisted, because Luigi is far from being off the hook. He's still charged with second-degree murder, along with several other state charges like weapons possession and false identification. And on top of that, there's also a federal case running against him, which means the death penalty is still technically on the table. So his defense team tried to argue that having both state and federal cases for the same event could be double jeopardy. But the judge basically said, no, not yet. No trials have happened. So that fight will come later. And what's next is he is due back in state court on December 1st. And while those terrorism charges are gone, the second-degree murder charge alone could carry 15 years to life if he's convicted. Meanwhile, the federal case is still moving forward separately, and the death penalty is tied to that federal case. Federal cases are a lot tougher to combat, so I don't have a good feeling about how this will be or how this will end up for Luigi. I mean, I'm not saying I'm rooting for Luigi. It's just, yeah, this news, you know, when people are doing this like headline, these grabby headlines like charges dropped. Well, not really. He's still facing just as much punishment as before. So don't fall for it. But anyway, on to the next one. This is a story that has been recommended to me, and I've seen it all over social media. There's been a lot of talk about what actually happened, and a lot of, you know, misinformation, because there's too many different things being said. So here's what I know so far. On the morning of Monday, September 15th, around 7 a.m., a faculty member at Delta State University found 21-year-old Trey Reed hanging from a tree near the campus pickleball courts. Now, Trey was a student at Delta State, and the discovery immediately set off shock and confusion. When police and the Bolivar County coroner got there, they said at first glance, there were no signs of foul play, meaning no apparent broken bones, no cuts, no other injuries that would point to an attack. But here's where things kind of get messy. Trey's family says law enforcement originally told them that he had died in his dorm bed. And later they were told he'd actually been found outside hanging from a tree. And that contradiction is fueling a lot of suspicion and anger. And rumors also started flying online that Trey's body showed other injuries, like some broken limbs. And the coroner has denied that, saying that the preliminary exam did not show any kind of those wounds or injuries. Right now, an official autopsy has been completed, but results have not been released yet. The Mississippi Bureau of Investigation is leading the case, and Trey's family has also brought on civil rights attorney Ben Crump. And if you follow true crime, you know that when Crump steps in, it usually means there are big questions about transparency and accountability. His team is asking for surveillance video from the campus and an independent autopsy just to be sure that there's nothing that's being hidden. At the same time, there's public pressure for the FBI to get involved, especially since Trey was a young Black man found hanging from a tree in the South, something with a obviously really painful historical context. Students and civil rights groups are making noise about that right now, as they should. So the timeline kind of looks like this. September 15th in the morning, Trey is found hanging near the pickleball courts by a faculty member. Police in the corner respond and they say no obvious signs of foul play. That same day, family is told two different versions of where Trey was found, first in his dorm, then outside. Coroner has denied social media claims of the broken bones. Civil rights attorney Ben Crump comes on board, pushes for transparency and access to some more video. And then yesterday, the autopsy was finished, but the results are still pending. So once they release more information on that, the state investigators are leading, and obviously people are calling for the FBI to step in. So I think that even though it's still under investigation, we will eventually learn more details. But regardless of what those details are, I just hope that the family is able to find some sort of justice and or closure with whatever those answers turn out to be. So whatever it ends up being, I will be here to update you next week, probably on the weekly docket if we learn more information by then. Now, the last story is a tragic story out of York County, Pennsylvania, specifically the North Codorus Township. On Wednesday, September 17th, just after 2 p.m., officers went to serve a warrant at a farmhouse in North Codorus Township. The target was 24-year-old Matthew James Ruth, a man from Hanover, Pennsylvania. Ruth had been wanting on stalking, trespassing, and prowling charges that were tied to his ex-girlfriend. The day before the shooting, his ex-girlfriend's mother called police to report that Ruth was outside their home, wearing camouflage and peering in with binoculars. She told police that she feared he was armed, and this wasn't the first time either, because just a month earlier in August, the woman's car had been set on fire, and she believed that Matthew Ruth was responsible. So when officers couldn't find him that night, they returned the next day with misdemeanor warrants in hand. They were there to arrest him, but what they walked into was an ambush. Matthew had apparently been lying in wait as plainclothes detectives from the Northern York County Regional Police Department went through the front door, which was unlocked. Matthew opened fire. He was armed with an AR-style rifle outfitted with a suppressor. The scene erupted in gunfire, and inside the house, three detectives, Sergeant Cody Becker, Detective Mark Baker, and Detective Isaiah Emmenheiser, were fatally shot. Two other officers, another detective and a York County Sheriff's deputy, were also hit as well. Both were rushed to Wellspan York Hospital, where they remain in critical but stable condition. Neighbors described hearing rapid gunfire echoing through the farmland, and officers swarmed the area. The suspect was ultimately shot and killed during the exchange. So here's what I know about him so far. Matthew Ruth was only 24 years old, but he had a disturbing pattern of behavior. He was facing charges for stalking his ex, for trespassing on her property, and for prowling. Just the night before, he'd been spotted in camo watching her home with binoculars, and he clearly had military-style gear and firepower, which made the ambush that much more terrifying. Officials say autopsies for the slain officers will be completed by the end of the week, and investigators are piecing together the exact timeline from Ruth's stalking and the arson in August to how he set up this ambush on the 17th. Governor Josh Shapiro has ordered flags at half staff and called it a devastating day for Pennsylvania. The FBI and ATF are now assisting the Pennsylvania State Police as they comb through all of the evidence. Now, I know that this week was really heavy for a lot of us, and one thing I want to acknowledge is the outpouring of love and support that I've personally gotten on my social media through DMs, through positive reviews and ratings, messages. I have been inundated with messages from people, and it has like restored my faith in humanity. And I just appreciate you guys so much. And I feel so much more connected to so many of you now because of those messages, and because I just feel like I can be a little more authentically myself when I'm talking to you guys. And all of that is to say that I'm very thankful, but I also want to restore your faith in humanity a little bit by ending this episode with some good news. So during the height of the pandemic lockdown, Asher Rosenfeld, a New York City 12-year-old, began the Audibles with Asher program, hosting weekly individual reading sessions over Zoom for children and young adults with special needs. He wanted to give them a routine and something to look forward to during a difficult time in the fall of 2020. Well, now, 5 years later, the bonds between them, built through Asher's initiative, continue stronger than ever. The resourceful 17-year-old is still seeing the same kids and young adults every week on Zoom to read books and further their friendships. Because it's online, it's easy for every participant, no matter their physical or medical condition, to join from their home. And the parents of special needs kids say that it has been a lifeline for their children, and for the Upper West Side teen, it's been a lesson in empathy, consistency, and connection. Asher reads to each participant, and then he donates and ships the books as well. Books like I Broke My Trunk, an Elephant and Piggy book, written by Mo Willems for ages 3 to 6 years old. This year, Asher has partnered with the nonprofit Friendship Circle, an organization promoting greater awareness and understanding of the uniqueness of people with special needs. And those who have participated in Audibles with Asher love the experience. Asher said, quote, reading brings the imagination to life. It takes us beyond our everyday world and brings us into someone else's, which is so special and so cool. I love to read, and I'm thrilled to be able to share my passion reading one-on-one and connecting over stories that we can enjoy together. Way to go, Asher. Your parents must be so proud, and that is such a cool thing. It's so neat to see teenagers. I mean, this kid is probably, 17 years old now, started this when he was 12. I mean, there's still goodness out in the world, despite how heavy this might seem at times, because I'm a true crime podcast, so I only really report mostly bad news. I thought it was important to, you know, give you guys a little glimmer of hope that there is still good in the world, and there's good people like Asher and like all of you. So thank you so much for listening to this week's weekly docket. I'll be back next week with a deep dive. Stay curious, stay vigilant. Mama Mystery out.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. In app only.